God.
God.
Grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference.
The Simple Actions Group wishes to extend a warm welcome to all in attendance today. These premises are non-smoking. Our group is welcome to use this room and the restrooms exclusively. Newcomers, is there anyone in their first 30 days of sobriety? We would like to welcome you. On Zoom, you can raise your hand and someone will chat with you. At this time, please silence your cell phones. Also, we respectfully ask that those present, please refrain from unnecessary moving around the room. This will keep distractions and disturbances to a minimum and allow everyone to listen uninterrupted. This group practices the spiritual foundations of anonymity, simpleness of purpose, singleness of purpose, and effective sponsorship. As a group, we believe that the book Alcoholics Anonymous provides alcoholics with a set of clear directions on precisely how to recover from the illness of alcoholism based on simple actions. It is the purpose of this meeting to carry that clear message and to focus on precisely how to recover from the illness of alcoholism by taking AA simple actions. This is the AA preamble. Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of people who share their experience, strength, and hope with each other that they may solve their common problem and help others to recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We are self-supporting through our own contributions. AA is not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organization, or institution. Does not wish to engage in any controversy, neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and help other alcoholics to achieve sobriety. The format of this meeting is an open, big book step study. As a group, we recognize the power of one alcoholic identifying with another alcoholic, sharing their experience, strength, and hope from the book Alcoholics Anonymous. We encourage you to engage in conversation and ask questions after the meeting pertaining to the step discussed tonight. This evening, we are discussing step four. We have Iran and Grant. I will read, clap, that's the other. Okay. I will read the first paragraph. We're starting on page 67, and then the panel will share. Step four made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. Also, we did resentments last week. We've divided it up. So this week, we are going to focus on fear and sex conduct. Nice.
Fear of sex.
Sex, yeah.
Okay. Page 67. Notice that the word fear is bracketed alongside the difficulties with Mr. Brown, Mrs. Jones, the employer, and the wife. This short word somehow touches about every aspect of our lives. It was an evil and corroding thread. The fabric of our existence was shot through with it. It set in motion trains of circumstances which brought us misfortune we felt we didn't deserve. But did not we ourselves set the ball rolling? Sometimes we think fear ought to be classed with stealing. It seems to cause more trouble. Who wants to go first?
What? Okay. My name is Iran. I'm a real alcoholic.
Hi, Iran.
My sobriety date is February 27th, 2009. I have a home group, A101. These Sunday mornings at 11 o'clock at Norfolk Sierra Hospital. I have a sponsor. I have a home group, but blah, blah, blah. I work with other people. I do a lot of things. I love this program. It saved my life, changed my life, and it's given me expected to have fear. So first of all, I love that it says it was an evil and corroding thread. The fabric of our existence was shot through with it. And then it set in motion trains of circumstances, which brought us misfortune. We felt we didn't. That is poor me. That's where I lived. You know, like, I love drinking though, real quick. I love the effect that's produced by alcohol. I love what it did for me. It actually was the first thing that got rid of most of all my fears, because I'm not good enough. I am good enough. Be my friend. Don't be my friend. Get close. Don't get too close. I like you. I don't like you. That beautiful, beautiful first drink. And I remember waking up in the cold, cold place next to the toilet. I love that place. And I remember waking up there, and I remember, like, my first thought was, I can't wait till I do that again. Alcohol did for me what nothing else had done. It got the fear, and it made me more sassy and more fun. And I was like quick-witted, and I'm like, more drink, let's go, right? And until it stopped doing that, right? And I started having to live like with me and drinking and never getting drunk enough anymore or high enough or whatever it was to change the way I feel. And I came into Alcoholics Anonymous. I remember coming into Alcoholics Anonymous, and I was just like, hey, I'm not fearful of anything. Like, I'm a tall black, you know what I mean? Like, I got you all. I will handle this. But I was miserable. I was absolutely utterly miserable. I walked around with my head held down because I was shameful of all the things I had done in my life. I was shameful of who I had become. I was shameful of things I was. I was full of these things. But all these circumstances, all the things that led me to that moment, they were not my fault. That's why I was so unwilling to do the 8-step. That was why I didn't want to do a 4-step. These were not my fault. God hated me. You know what I mean? Right. My parents were mean. My mother never loved me. Right. My first love cheated on me.
Bad luck.
You know what I mean? Like, it was all the things. Those circumstances led me to that. I didn't deserve to be miserable. I just want alcohol to work correctly. Right. But it didn't. And it set the ball rolling. Sometimes we think fear ought to be classed with stealing. Should be. I've spent hours. I'm sorry. I lied. I spent days, months stuck in my head, not being good enough, being horrible, being miserable, trying to be different and could not ever get different. Like fear of not being good enough, the fear of being alone, the fear of not being alone, the fear of being loved, but not being loved the way I want to, the fear of being touched, the fear of not, my mom never loved me the way I want to, the fear of never having brother or sister, the fear of never having kids, the fear, all these fears. I was like so in my head about them and I was never doing anything about them. You know, I could never do anything about them because they were like literally wrapping themselves around me and forcing me to be more internally thought of who I am and what I am. And then I would sit there and drink at them, you know, until I'm good enough again. And then once I'm good enough, I'm fine. And then I'm miserable, you know, and then, you know, then you're it's just always horrible, you know, and then it's like, it seems to cause more trouble. And I think about it, like, did it really cause more trouble? Was fear more trouble than the law or stealing or not being good enough? Absolutely. It was more trouble because it was the only thing that left me alone with the one person who wanted me dead, myself. It was more trouble because I could never get out of it. And I was always caught and that fear would always trap me. And then it was like, let's go die or let's go, you know, out for one more bang. And that fear is what brought me finally to Alcoholics Anonymous. But still, that fear is what wrapped me inside Alcoholics Anonymous, afraid to do anything about it. Even though I could hear the solution, even though I could feel the solution and watch people in the solution, the fear of not being able to do anything was more trouble than anything else for me. That's it. That's all I got on that. It's hot, by
Thank
the way.
Thank you. Hot, I'm hot, too. Can somebody do something?
Turn down the lights. Okay. I'm Grant. I'm an alcoholic. Thank you, Iran. And thank you, Amy, for asking me to be up here tonight. I wasn't planned to be up here, so I'm going to try and stay on topic, really. My sobriety date is March 19th of 2010. This is my home group and Simple Actions. And I work with men. Right now, I don't have any men who are interested in reading the book with me. They'll take my phone calls, but they won't read the book. I have a sponsor who knows he's my sponsor, and he knows he sponsors me because I call him every day and fill his voicemail with messages. And then he calls me back. And we talk and we sort things out like resentments, fear, and sex. Because I'm an alcoholic. Like I didn't understand. I'm going to start with this because I didn't understand what alcoholism was when I got here. I had spent plenty of nights on bar stools telling people I was a functioning alcoholic and how I can get to work tomorrow, but I'm going to get good and drunk tonight. And who knows what's going to happen somewhere between now and when I arrive at work tomorrow or what condition I'm going to arrive in or what other substances I'm going to need to get there. And I thought, you know, I'm not a real alcoholic. Deep down inside, I didn't want to believe that that was really the problem. And part of the reason I didn't want to believe that that was really the problem was I didn't know what the real problem was, right? I thought the problem was, and it took so many times coming to these meetings and hearing people say this again and again before I understood it. I thought the real problem was is how many drinks I had to drink to get to where I would be unconscious, pass out, stop, be escorted out of the bar. You know, all of those things that happened, I thought that was what made me an alcoholic. And I was like, well, I guess I should just stop when I'm ready to stop. Well, what I didn't realize is I didn't have any control over it. I stopped. My last drunk was my last drunk because of fear, right? Ooh,
yeah.
I was terrified of the grief, remorse, and regret that I left in the heart of the person I was in love with at the time. And she went on to marry me in sobriety and then divorce me in sobriety. And a lot of that has to do with character deep. But to this point of fear, right? Like I am filled with fear and I don't have any idea about what that is. I didn't even realize I had that much fear. I knew I was afraid of spiders. Like I had this terrific, like sweat through a shirt, piercing scream reaction to any spider that ever came in my house. So I knew I was afraid of spiders. That was crystal clear. And probably if given the opportunity to be out in the woods and be approached by a bear, I would say I was afraid of bears too, because I would definitely scream and run the other way, right? But I didn't realize all the other fears I had. I didn't realize, like, this is one of my best friends in the whole world, right? And when I came to Alcoholics Anonymous, there's no way he would have been my best friend, okay? I had a terrible fear of gay men.
So do I. It's okay.
Terrible. Terrible fear. And but I didn't know that I had that. It didn't occur to me to have that. But the way I treated gay men, it would have been obvious. And I was terrified of women and only interacted with them in as much as I could get something out. So my treatment of women was abysmal, which we'll get to in the sex part of this. And it was because I was afraid of them. I was afraid of what they would think of me. I was afraid that I wouldn't be interesting enough. I wouldn't have the qualities they wanted. I couldn't live up to whatever responsible things a human being would do in a relationship, right? And so I was terrified. I had horrible, horrible fear of failure. So much so that my early sobriety was riddled with insomnia, because I wasn't jumping right into solving this problem, right? I wasn't doing what's in this book right away. So I would stay awake all night, every night, just thinking about the things I hadn't done in my life, the things that I needed to do with my life, the directions I needed to go, paperwork that I never filled out on time. Like yeah. All the things that I was afraid of that I spent a lot of time up here in my head thinking about, but never accomplished, never putting any. I remember taking to my first sponsor, the fear that I wanted to be a doctor and that I couldn't get the paperwork in on time the first time. And they waitlisted me. And he's like, well, that sounds pretty easy. Just turn the paperwork in on time. Maybe even turn it in early. I was like, you can turn it in early? He's like, yeah, you can actually turn it in early. Amazing. And I went from being a guy who got waitlisted 2 years before I got sober to a year into sobriety, getting into medical. I'm a doctor because I learned to face fears through these steps, right? I had to learn that these fears exist in me, whether they're rational or not. And I have to seek a God of my understanding to work through them. And I don't want to get on a long tangent on what God is or isn't. For me, I had to come to an understanding that God is a source of power that gets me through these. It gets me through these words. It gets me through difficult relations and allows me to be me in the present moment in any situation. That's it. That's my experience, right? And my hope is that if you're here and you're struggling with the God idea, because I came in here very much convinced that God had no business for me either. And I had to have that personal experience that God would get me through things that I, up to this point, had never been able to get myself through. If you're not sure about fears, the other fear I had to face early in sobriety is like the wonderful fear of, we used to talk about all the time, you know, the difference between, courage, like the courage is not an absence of fear, it's faith in the face of fear, right? Like I have a lot of tattoos, right? And when I was drinking, my tattoos were an attempt at proving that I was cool enough, tough enough, belonged, could fit in. And really, I was just terrified that somebody was going to see me on the street and beat me up. I didn't know I had that fear before I got here, though. Like, I think it's really important to put that out there. Like, most of us don't come here like riddled with fear and aware of it. We come here riddled with fear and unaware of it, right? And I had to do an inventory to get to the brass tacks of, there's all these fears that I have, and I can live in them and suffer from them, or I can move forward with God. And, you know, that, like, that's the evil and corroding thread that shot through with it. Even in the last month, right? Like, Thanksgiving, I took my daughters back from, they came to visit. I took them back to their moms. My youngest daughter spilled a 20-ounce cup of fruit punch in the car, right? I did not lose my mind on her because she spilled fruit punch in the car. I lost my mind on her because I was afraid of, it's going to cost me money to fix it.
Yes.
I'm afraid that my wife, her stepmom, is going to be pissed off about it. I'm afraid that she's not going to learn to be responsible for herself, right? Like, these things exist in me today, almost 13 years into, and I had to call my sponsor with my tail between my legs and tell him how much of a psychopath I was for 20 minutes in the car, and had to make amends to a 7-year, and he had a good laugh because he's got a good spirit about it. And then he put me to the task for the last week, because I had my daughters again for the week after Christmas. He put me to the task of, how are we going to get through 7 days and not act like a child throwing a tantrum? And it was doing these things, like reading in the morning, prayer, meditation, looking for God all throughout the day, praying all throughout the day, hitting my knees when I'm disturbed, right? And having some gratitude for these kids and showing them the love and respect and understanding they deserve if I have true gratitude, right? And living this way, and then calling my sponsor and showing up at meetings and doing all these other things that we do every day. And I was almost ashamed of, and tell him that it worked out just fine. Yeah. Right. Because it was God running the show, not me. And they still made messes and mistakes, and I was still okay. And like, talked them through emotional stuff that, like, normally they wouldn't want to even come to me with, because they're afraid of me, because I'm sometimes insane. So like, that's where this program to me speaks volumes, in the miraculous ways that, like, even today I have alcohol. It doesn't just go away. I get to experience it every day, and I can choose to seek a path towards God and work with God on God's term and behave better than I used to. Or I can be the crazy old alcoholic that I've always been and make amends. And I'm grateful for amends too. Like, I used to hate making amends because I hated looking foolish. Wait, that's another fear. fear of looking bad, right? And it was when I finally came to grips with the fact that if I can be wrong and be okay with being wrong, relationships in my life, that's absolutely. So I'll stop there.
Thanks. All right, we're going to continue the reading on page 68. Perhaps there is a better way. We think so, for we are now on a different basis, the basis of trusting and relying upon God. We trust infinite God rather than our finite selves. We are in the world to play the role he assigned, just to the extent that we do as we think he would have us and humbly rely on him. Does he enable us to match calamity with serenity? We never apologize to anyone for depending upon our creator. We can laugh at those who think spirituality the way of weakness. Paradoxically, it is the way of strength. The verdict of the ages is that faith means courage. All men of faith have courage. They trust their God. We never apologize for God. Instead, we let him demonstrate through us what he can do. We ask him to remove our fear and direct our attention to what he would have us be. At once, we commence to outgrow fear. Iran?
So like, I was looking at my my notes for that page, and it says page 98. I was like, and then it's having this burn the idea into the consciousness of every man that he can get well regardless of anyone. The only condition is that he trusts in God and house. And I was like, that's what we're talking about, right? Is that, but I'm all like, I love the at once, right? It's a promise. At once we commence to outgrow fear. First of all, why is the better way got to be God? You know what I mean? I'm like, right, isn't there another way? That's what I thought when I first got here. Why is that better way got to be God? This, and I've got myself through a lot of tight situations, you know, like, just give me a little bit of time in here and I'll be fine. And I tried it and I tried it and there was no other way, you know, like for me, for a guy like me, there was no other way. And the funny thing about all of that is that I was still with my finite brain was trying to be an infinite guy to understand and fathom these steps, what God was, you know, like I wasn't going to move. I wasn't about to take any step until I understood God, how he made the sun rotate around and the axes of the world and the people and why they were in my, like, I wanted to know every aspect of God. Cause that's how, you know, I'm not going to do anything. It's just another one of my fears though. If I don't do anything, I can't make, that's like I live in that place, right? Don't do anything. Can't make a mess. You know what I mean? Like, but then in that, in doing, I end up with myself in more of a mess. And it's like, well, there's that insanity again. I'm going to do something different, but I don't do anything different. And it's the same thing over and over and over again in that insanity. And I love that it says here, we trust the infinite, but I didn't know how to get there. Right. You know, step one, of course, I'm powerless and unmanageable. I get that. All right. Once I start, I'm not going to stop. My mind constantly gets me drunk. Right. All right. My life is low, unmanageable. I'm homeless, bum, who pisses on himself. I get that. That's fine. Came to believe. Right. But it was just like, came to believe that a power greater than myself could restore me to sanity. For a long time, I was like, was I ever sane? Was there any sanity to ever be returned from? You know, like I didn't. And at that point, that was like a lot of stuff. Like, is there a God? If he does, he doesn't like me. Is there, like, I made everything so complicated. Somebody said something one time. It was like, I was talking to a young man later on in my sobriety. We were talking about the step three and about God and the actor. And I was like, I was an actor. I got his pay, you know, I just an actor. So I don't, that doesn't work for me because I get to make my own choices as an actor. You know what I mean? Like I'm going to go a little bit to stage right, but I'm not staying my life. You know what I mean? Like I can make my own choice. But my problem isn't about being the actor or the choice. It's about the position I allow myself to play. Like I'm like the conductor of an orchestra, but I have no idea how the winds play with the violins and the flutes and that drum guy. I don't know how to do any of that, but I'm conducting it. It sounds horrible. And it took a long time for me to go, you know what? I just want to play this triangle. You know what I mean? Like I want to be in the back. I'm gonna go, you know what I mean? Like, that's it. Sometimes I'm like, go ding, ding, you know, but you know, just ding. And that took a like, you know, like I just want to listen and be the last thing here. Like, and it, when I realized like, that's really a metaphor for how I've lived my life. Being a conductor of a show, I have no idea how to, you know, direct. And then to just step back and just be someone who, when pointed at, takes an action. And that's what I got when I got a sponsor, you know, like that understood. They were like really simple. Like, you don't have to, like, we don't have to figure nothing out. We don't think, stop. Like the figuring out happens in step 11. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? When you start, that's where this right now is just actions. It is like, I'm the guy who in the bus, who got off of the bus and went into the 7-Eleven and bought the beer every single day, even though he didn't want it, and did it because I had a habit. And these steps are like going to the 7-Eleven. I'm going to remember that I'm powerless. I have no idea about God, but I know I'm not it. You know what I mean though? But I'm going to turn that over. I'm going to do some inventory. And the funny thing is like, it's got to be perfect inventory. It's got the fear of not doing a perfect inventory. I use the excuse, you know, if I don't do it perfect, I'm going to get drunk again. They say you're going to get drunk. I did an inventory in treatment. I remember this. It was my favorite line later. I like did the inventory, said it to the guy, and he just like, that was a well thought out inventory. I was like, I know, thanks. Because I was only going to tell certain things. But what happened with those certain things is then I couldn't live with those certain things after that. Mm-hmm. So I had to go do another inventory. Oh, what, that's step 10? Continue. So I'm going to continue to do 4 through 9, every day, which means I'm going to continue to do 1 through 9, 11, 12. You know what I mean? Like, it's just like my... It's like going to the 7-Eleven. That's what these steps are for me. Like, I'm just going to, instead of ended up at the 7-Eleven, I'm ending up at the steps, which means I'm ending up at this meet, which means I'm ending up with a sponsor or a sponsor. We're ending up in the book and we're doing this inventory. This fear that I live in is I don't like change. And anything I can do to stop change, I will stop. But I have to learn that change is the true absence. Because those actions I have to take to face that fear is what really changes my life. The actions I take to face any fear is what really gives me the strength to move forward. Like when I am stuck in fear of not being good enough, well, let's do something that makes you feel good enough. Why don't you clean up your house? Why don't you call another alcoholic who's doing worse than you? Why don't you get up and go, you know, do something that makes you good enough? So the problem is, it's not, I'm never as bad as my fears really are. I'm only as bad as I allow those fears to live. And you know what I mean? The actions I take out of that is how I live. So that's
awesome. Thanks, Iran. Yeah, no, I'm going to jump on one piece that Iran just said is take it from somebody who tried this the wrong way. Because I wasn't interested in God when I got here. And I had a huge fear about two things. One, this is straight out of my inventory. One, ending up like my family of origin,
yes,
Bible thumping, cruel, chastising people that I didn't like. And two, having to admit I was wrong about it, right? And until I could face those fears, I couldn't really let God in. But I spent a lot of time in early sobriety, probably not as much as I've heard other people describe. But I spent a lot of time in early sobriety trying to read a lot of other books other than Alcoholics Anonymous and try to figure out God. My suggestion, having walked other men through this and done this myself, is do the 12 steps. And when you get to step 11, if you're still confused about your God that you're developing a relationship with, then seek out other literature that might help describe or understand God on a deeper level. And I say that because actually what it says in the book, you can ask a lot of other religious people who have access to a lot of other religious textbooks and ideas for some suggested readings on how to go seek out God. And that's really what the 11th step is about. So if you're not there, don't worry about it. Yeah. That's my side on that. Anyways, but the other thing that was really important for with this in this inventory, as I was writing the story, as I was uncovering, was their prayer. Being able to be afraid of being late to work and sitting in traffic and saying this fear prayer in my car, holding the steering wheel and discovering that like the grip on the steering wheel would slowly relax the more I said the prayer, right? The turning my will over to God as I'm asking for this fear to be removed and ask him for direction for my thoughts and my ideas, like, where should I be? What should I be doing? How should I be going about the rest of my day? And it took me a long time to like really understand that there's a whole bunch of prayers all in this book. Like I was told about all of them up front, but it took me a long time to understand that I could use all of them. And I think that's really one of the key people we talk about, you know, don't just read the book or learn the book, learn to live the, you know, yeah, you can learn to live the principles. You can be a demonstration of affairs. And you can use all of the tools, like all the different prayers in this book to get you through different situations, fear, ships, difficult situations, sick family, all these kind of things. You can use all of the suggestions on pages 86 and 88 on how to meditate, right? If you don't know how to meditate, there's directions for that in this book. You don't have to go find some special meditation. If you want to do that, that's also excellent. I would highly encourage it. You don't have to, is my point. Like it's all in the book. Like, and I, like that, there's no judgment on that, right? Like I went and did that. I went to New York. Like I was a couple years sober. My sober friend and I, we went to New York. We went to this meditation retreat in New York for 3 days. And we're with a bunch of other AAs and we're doing this meditation thing, learning how to meditate better. And you know what I learned? Is you get better at meditating by meditating. You know, what? There's no key to unlocking that.
Oh my God.
And actually one of the most powerful moments in that whole experience was, again, another fear, right? Like the fear of helping. This guy was falling down in New York. We don't know if I assume he was drunk. We found out a couple, we walked through because some nice, just little moments. Like I barely did anything. We helped him get on the subway and gave him a few dollars and he showed up in AA and got sober, right? Like that's a miracle, right? So it's proof that in spite of all of these fears, in spite of all of these resentments, like I not only can get better, but I can help other people. And that's powerful. That's why I came here, because I lacked power, right? Mm. I didn't lack God, I lacked power. And I think that's a huge element in this, right? Like whether I wanted to admit there was a God or believe in God when I came here was not as important as the fact that I was so sick and tired of the way I was living, that I needed a power to solve that problem. And I had none. And I saw in AA that power existed. And I had a sneaking suspicion it wasn't anything any one other person in AA had. They were in conscious contact with something, whether I believed it was their God, a higher power, a doorknob, whatever you want to reference. I recognized that they had a power that I didn't have, and I needed it, and I needed it really bad. And that for me is why, like, just continuing to do this. And I think Iran said it very well. Like, you don't have to get this inventory perfect. Just do it. Just get it done. Sit down with somebody, hammer it out, and then do it again if you have to. Like, I had to do a couple of inventories in the first couple of years just because I was not clear. I wasn't, sane. Like, I still wanted to blame the world for all my problems. And I needed to do this a bunch of times to really get full clarity that, like, a lot of what I needed was humility to understand that I'm not that important. I'm not in charge of really anything. And all my ideas about what I should be in charge of are generally just self-centered, so they don't get me anywhere and they definitely don't get you anywhere. So maybe I should just shut up and be a bum on the bus for once. Mm. Right. I like the analogy of the triangle. I'm not going to unfold that one either, but I do like that analogy because it does remind me that, like, just a worker among workers, man among men, whatever the situation is, husband amongst husbands, family member amongst family members, like, whatever my role in each situation in my life is, that's what it reminds me. Like, I'm just there to do what I'm supposed to do, not manage what anybody else is doing. And I struggle with that. Like, I always want to manage everybody else's thoughts, feelings, and ideas. But it reminds me that that's not the role I'm assigned. That's not the role I'm assigned. And I'm grateful.
All right. We're going to continue on page 68. Now about sex. Many of us needed an overhauling there, but above all, we tried to be sensible on this question. It's so easy to get way off the track. Here we find human opinions running to extremes, absurd extremes, perhaps. One set of voices cry that sex is a lust of our lower nature, a base necessity of procreation. Then we have the voices who cry for sex and more sex, who bewail the institution of marriage, who think that most of the troubles of the race are traceable to sex causes. They think we do not have enough of it, or that it isn't the right kind. They see its significance everywhere. One school would allow man no flavor for his fare, and the other would have us all on a straight pepper diet. We want to stay out of this controversy. We do not want to be the arbiter of anyone's sex conduct. We all have sex problems. We'd hardly be human if we didn't. What can we do about them?
Oh, you'll leave me with that question.
I know.
What are we gonna do? All right. First of all, every time I hear about that, I say, and then I am a guy who, right? I was a guy like that. Like, I was like, I wake up naked next to weird places. I lived in Portland. We had porn stores that were the size of this church. They had rooms. I also bathhouses. I worked in a gay bar with male strippers. I was about, let's do it. Right. But there was a lot of drinking and drugs involved in that for me. Mm-hmm. There was a lot. But I would go to any length to have a little sex. I ain't gonna lie about it. Like, I would do some weird things. And I remember I had been out for that story. Okay. I've been out for 4 or 5 days. And I was going to work and I just needed to go home, right? So I walk out, I got the cab there, I'm going home. So I'm about to get in the car, sexy man with bike. I'm like, squirrel. So I go and I'm like, so I talk to him, we get in the car, we go to this place called Fancy Video. It literally is about as big as yours. It has little rooms. We got a little room. And I'm sitting in there and then I like, it's pitch black. And then I'm like, where am I at? Oh, I'm in the porn store. So I like start looking around. I'm like feeling around for my pants, no pants. I'm looking for my shirt, no shirt. I'm looking for my wallet, no wallet, no wallet, no shirt, no shoes. I'm naked in the porn store. Like, that's how I am. So I'm like trying to spend an hour to try to like get out of this place. There's no way out. I have to walk out naked. So I'm walking out in the middle of this porn store and the lady's like, on. I'm like, and we're having this dance. You know what I mean? Like, there's like so much going on. So we ended up calling the police. They put me in this weird little thing, and I'm supposed to go home, right? Go home and go to bed. It's been too much, 4 days. I mean, go home. But I can't, because immediately I go drink at you. I got to go home and I get my bottle and I drink at you. And I tell you, like, the reason that I tell you that whole entire story is because that's my life of my selfishness. I just want to use you to get off. You know what I mean? Like, I want to take from you. That's how I spend. I want to feel better. I need to feel better. I deserve to feel better. I want you and I need you to want me. And so by doing that and getting what I want, then I can discard you out of my life. I feel better. Let's move on. You know, I was just talking to an ex of mine, probably my second ex. I was like 21 years old when we got together, and I lied. I cheated on him. I like was a horrible, horrible. And then because of the 12 steps of alcoholics, it's probably about 9 years ago, we ran into each other randomly in town. And I'm like riddled with fear, right? And I'm like, oh, he's on my list, right? And so we end up going out and we have a long conversation. And I was surprised that he even wanted to talk. So we ended up having to talk. So we've been friends since that time, like 9 years back, being really close friends and remembering how our love life was, how our life was, how we talked, how we done. And we were sitting there, and last night he called me up out of blue. We were on the phone for like 2 hours. Like, this guy really is an amazing human being. He's like just sweet. Like, I feel horrible about the things I put in. And we were talking, and then he just looked at me once and he said, well, not look, but he said, he talked to me and said, hey, when are you gonna stop feeling sorry? And I was like, what? Yeah, I'm not sorry. And I was like, all right, maybe I am feeling sorry. Maybe I need to take some action about that, because he's forgiven me, right? And I remember that. That was one of the things too that my friends used to tell me about when I was getting sober in Portland. They're like, I had my head held down in shame. They're like, Iran, do you think God is all forgiving, loving, tolerant, patient? I'm like, yes. Do you think he's forgiving you? And I was like, yes. They're like, then when are you going to forgive yourself? So that's what the sex of the fear for me is, this the idea, like, I have to learn how to forgive myself through this. Most of these ideas about sex, these ideas about what I want out of it, relationships or whatever, are always based on a fear, or I wanted something from you to feel better. Like, that's really my case for sex. Like, and sometimes it's not the sex. You know what I mean? Like, it's just not even the sex. It's the, like, I would lie and manipulate to get what I wanted, which was to make me feel better, the human, and I would destroy people. I would destroy relationships. I would get into couples' friendship zone to just get close to one of them to do these dirty, like, I did some horrible things. And then, but the funny part about all of this is, like, Alcoholics Anonymous is not the arbiters of anyone's sex. I get to make the choices in the future. And that was the thing that I, like, walking into this, and I'm like, so I'm going to have to be a holy roller that only, you know, has sex on Sunday sideways. And I'm like, you know what I mean? Though, like, or like, I was like, well, I mean, it's illegal in Virginia to have sex outside of missionary. I mean, did you know that? It's, yeah, I'm just saying. You know what I'm saying? So I'm like, I might be screwed here. You know what I mean? Like, yeah. So, like, all of these things, like when I got here, that again, that fear of, like, oh my God, how am I going to live? And then now walking myself, opportunity to realize, like, I can make as long, but I can make choices though based on, am I being selfish? I can have as a single, I can have, but am I being truthful? Am I being selfish, self-centered? Am I leaving something? Am I leading you to believe that there's something more than what it is? If I'm not doing any of that, bottoms up. Anyway, but I'm a mess. I'm sorry, but it's me. Anyway, but in that, right, it is that opportunity that has been given to me by this program to learn that no one gets to determine how I live, but me and my, knowing Alcoholics Anonymous even picked this is the hardest thing to say, like, they were like, we aren't here for that. This is the one thing you and God have. This is the piece where I have to decide with God. My relationship with other human beings, that is sexual or non-sexual, that is what I get to decide when I have a relationship with God. And what that is amazing, because they've also given me a sort of, like, ladder of, like, work to walk in between and see what that looks like. Is it being selfish? Am I being dishonest? Am I being rude? Am I just trying to steal the vicarious pleasure? You know what I mean? Like, Or am I trying to bring something to this? Is this meaning something? And so today, my what it looks like for me in this thing is like I've walked through where it's looked like no sex at all, right? I was like, I'm doing good, And then it was like, oh, I'm a little fun. Oh, I might be going with borderline. My favorite thing, and we haven't, I'm going to say it now anyway. My favorite thing is if I have a sex problem, I just throw myself and work with others a lot easier. Like, I'm like, there was a time when I was like, I got 15 people. We just going to read because I just can't even deal with it. You know, right? You know, like, I do not, you know, but it is. But you know, when I rose from those moments, the freedom I got, I learned about myself. I didn't have any more regrets. I didn't have any more like situations I needed to make right or wrong. I got a chance to make better choices without making a choice, but to do the next right thing and throw myself into work. That's where my sex problem, whatever problem that is, gets fixed. Ooh. I don't even have to fix it. I just go work with other people and somehow God does this for me.
Thank you.
Thanks, Iran. I'm glad I'm not the only crazy person when it comes to sex.
Okay.
No, I really had to come to grips with the idea that my treatment of other people in relationship was as objects. You were there to serve me in mm-hmm. some way, shape, or form. Like I had a friend and I could say that because he still won't let me make amends to him. Who I can't make amends to for two reasons. One, that girl I told you about that I was dating, that I married and then divorced, that one time when she was single, he was interested in her and I cock blocked him and took advantage of that situation. And then later sold him out at work because we worked together to our boss that I was concerned about his drug consumption on the side and got him fired. And that's one of those amends that nice. I've tried to reach out a few times and I still need to make, but I'm ready to make it when I can make it.
Yes.
And you know, I mistreat people on both sides of them, right? Like I don't make relationships when I'm drinking. I just seek out people to satisfy me, right? I have an ease and comfort problem. I made my peace with that a long time ago, that like my alcoholism centers around the need for ease and comfort, right? And I will get it by any means necessary, whether it's, you know, my roommate who comes home crying because she saw her boyfriend kissing some girl at a bar, and well, shark bait, I'm on that for the next 3 months until I'm bored with that interaction and move on, right?
Yeah.
Or I go to Costa Rica with some friends to have a great time and find myself drunk and trying to hook up with an underage girl in a bar. And I'm happily taking advances from her mom, who's like, good, an American, she can take care of my daughter the rest of her life, right? Mm-hmm. Thankfully, I didn't fall into that trap, but I got pretty close. And my best friend and roommate for a time, we got drunk together. His girlfriend ended up on my lap in the backseat of the car while he was driving. And I made passes at his girlfriend. I had to make amends for that after. Right? Like, so I'm not up here like some saint in AA, right? Like I have really good relationships today because of what we're going to read next and applying that to my relationships with other people. So I stop treating people. So I stop taking advantage of people and their vulnerability, right? Because that's like, I'm vulnerable and I'm just going to beat you to the game. That's all it is. And it's not right. It's not justified. And I've taken a lot of hard lumps to look at the fact that I was sick and insane and I needed some changing in that area. So I'm going to let Amy read that next part because it's way more.
I'm going to actually read the next two parts. We only have 10 minutes left. So we're going to start on page 69. Whatever our ideal turns out to be, we must be willing to grow toward it. We must be willing to make amends where we have done harm, provided that we do not bring about still more harm in so doing. In other words, we treat sex as we would any other problem. In meditation, we ask God what we should do about each specific matter. The right answer will come if we want it. God alone can judge our sex situation. Counsel with persons is often desirable, but we let God be the final judge. We realize that some people are as fanatical about sex as others are loose. We avoid hysterical thinking or advice. We're going to finish up on page 70 to sum up about sex. We earnestly pray for the right ideal, for guidance in each questionable situation, for sanity, and for the strength to do the right thing. If sex is very troublesome, we throw ourselves the harder into helping others. We think of their needs and work for them. This takes us out of ourselves. It quiets the imperious urge when to yield would mean heartache. In this book, you read again and again that faith did for us what we could not do for ourselves. We hope you are convinced now that God can remove whatever self-will has blocked you off from him. If you have already made a decision and an inventory of your grosser handicaps, you have made a good beginning. That being so, you have swallowed and digested some big chunks of truth about yourself.
Oh my God. Fantastic. Well, I think I've touched bases on all that, so we're good. No. I love God alone can judge sex situation. But here's it. In this book, you read again and again that faith did for us what we could not do for ourselves. And that's really like where I, like that's it's over and over and over and over again. That's what this inventory is. That's what the third step, that's the 10, 11, the faith. I had faith in this program the minute I started doing it. Like going, all right, I'm going to do it, all of it. Mm-hmm. Like, so, and even if it's to prove you wrong, I'm going to do it. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. But faith, again and again, I was thinking, I have spent my whole life being a gay Black man. And I say that because I've spent my whole life from like, I was born in the 70s. I spent my whole life through a lot of weird combination, racism, sexism, craziness, and things in my life full of fear. I found myself hiding out in gay bars because that's where I thought it was the safest. And I was just walking down the street in Town Center right before Christmas. And I was having a joyous time. I think I had a little extra sachet in my life. It was an extra sachet. It was. And I was like, so I was twitching down the street and I had these kids fall because we're going to go to a Christmas party for a store. And this guy, he was like, oh, act like a man. And I was like, I'm sorry. I am a man. If you have a problem with it, maybe you should look at your manhood. And then I walked on. And then I remembered, I was like, then I had to stop for 5 seconds and go, is that rude? And I was like, am I okay? There's like five Black men. I was like, I could be shot. I'm worried about, am I going to be right? Was I gentle? Was I blah, 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 blah. Right? Like that. And I was like, yeah, I'm good. And I kept going. But I'm like, that's the faith. I was no longer worried about what you thought of or how I should respond. I was more worried about if I was wrong in the midst of everything. And that's where I see where the faith over and over again in the book and in the lives of the people, I've seen where that. Oh, if you're new, please find someone who's properly armed with the facts about themselves, which means that they know that once they start, they cannot stop. And they have a mind that will constantly get them drunk, who's willing to take you through the steps of alcoholics, which I have found to be in the book named Alcoholics Anonymous, One Step at a Time. Thank you, Amy, so much for asking.
I was waiting for this other part of the reading. We reviewed our conduct of the past.
Sorry.
Where had we been selfish, dishonest, or inconsiderate? Whom had we hurt? Did we unjustifiably arouse jealousy, suspicion, or bitterness? Where were we at fault? What should we have done instead? We got this all down on paper and looked at it. And that, like, I'm only reading it because I'm remarried and like, I have to visit this all the time. Every conversation, every discourse about something that we disagree on, every fight we have, like I have to look at, did I cause jealousy, suspicion, or bitterness? Where was I being selfish, dishonest, or inconsiderate? Do I owe an amends? Did I cause harm? Right. And if I say yes to any of that, I have to work that out. Right. And I have to talk to my sponsor about it. Right. And then it says, and we mold our ideas, our deals, and with God, we ask God to mold our ideals and help us live up to them. Like I've heard all kinds of people talk about all kinds of things about sex ideals and making your ideals list. And I'm going to go out on a limb and say that's shenanigans.
Yeah.
And point out the fact that my sex ideals have never been in my own because I'm selfish and self-centered.
Yes.
My sex ideals have been a direct result of doing inventory, talking with a sponsor, and asking God for direction, and those things come to bear. And here's where they come to bear. I'm divorced, newly divorced, trying to connect with an old friend in AA who she's going through a divorce. And we just decided to meet for coffee because we're just getting divorced. And we're like, who else can we talk to who understands one another? Right. And so we meet, we have coffee, right? Big world, right? But like, so we sit down and we meet, we have coffee, and instantly like realize we really hit it. And neither one of us, like having been around for a little while, neither one of us wants this. Both of us like walk away from it, like calling our sponsors, like, this is insane. We should not be getting in a relationship right now. We're both out of divorces, blah, 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 blah. And both of our sponsors directed. And here we are, 5 years, year and a half into wonderful. Like, we have a wonderful life together. And none of it's because we did what we thought was best. We tried to talk to our sponsors and get God direction to move forward out of bad relations, out of sick relations, into healthier relations, using this step as it's outlined. And we still make mistakes. And I still have to go into Two Wives and read every day and figure out how to not get into fights and trouble over stupid things when I could just say, I'm sorry, I'm a little disturbed right now. Step out of this and we'll discuss this later. Mm-hmm. Right? Like, I've learned to do all of those things in here, not anywhere else, not in therapy. I've done a lot of therapy. That didn't help me very much, a little bit, but not very much. But this helped me. And that's what I'm getting at. It's like, if I do it this way, it works.
Thanks. Thank you. We are going to pass the basket in accordance with the seventh tradition. You can sign up for email on our website at simpleactions.net. Thank you. There is a PayPal card and a Venmo card in the basket if you'd rather use that. The seventh tradition states that every AA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. While contributions cover each group's rent and other expenses, the seventh tradition is essential at every level of AA service. It is both a privilege and a responsibility for groups and members to ensure that not only their group, but also their intergroup, central office, local services, district, area, and the general service office remain self-supporting. This keeps AA free of outside influences that might divert us from our primary purpose, to help the alcoholic who still suffers. Announcements. Are there any AA-related announcements? Okay. Simple Actions is a home group. If you're interested in joining our home group or